Hi everyone, welcome to a very special Matrix Moments series that we're doing today. I'm Sudipto and I'm part of the investment team at Matrix Partners. And as you can see, there's a lot more color today in our Matrix Moments than it usually is. And the reason behind that is we're in Goa for our annual offsite. And over the past few days, we have been discussing and debating on multiple different topics, from investing, term sheets, on about becoming a VC, not becoming a VC. And we thought we'll get all of these together and share it with our viewers and call it the Goa Brew series. So welcome to the Goa Brew series. So hi everyone. In this episode, we will discuss about hard clauses in our term sheet. We have Avnish with us. And as early stage investors, right, generally we are always on the same side of table as the founders are, other than the time when we're negotiating a term sheet with the founders. And Avnish and I were discussing actually about one particular company a couple of days back, and we realized that a lot of these terms are actually for the benefit of the company, outside probably the commercial interests of the investors, the commercial rights. All the terms sometimes also benefit for the company, which sometimes it gets lost while discussing with the founder. And I've seen Avnish discussing with me and saying that if I were a founder, I would do it this way. And we thought it would be good we bring some of those points in front of our viewers so that we can also explain why some of these clauses are there in the term sheet. So that's a little bit of the context. Thanks, Avnish, for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you. For those who don't know, Sudipto Bhai's pet name at Matrix is, we call him Dada. He suggested this and you know, we have this series called the Goa Brew series. So very excited to be here, Dada. You said, I say that I think like a founder because I was a founder. And honestly, there are two, three things that I have learned in this business after starting as a VC. And now I'm going back to my founder roots and I find it much easier to bridge that gap for myself and for the founders. And you know, one of the things that founders should realize is that it's an asymmetry of information business. When we give out a term sheet, when we are investing, the reality is we know 20% of what we should know. Founder knows 100%,
yeah.
Right? Often in a term sheet, a founder expects symmetry. No, wrong assumption. And I've been a founder, I've expected symmetry. And then I have realized, but I have all the information. I don't need protection. The investor doesn't have the information. They need protection. So it's an asymmetry of information business. It's your company. You know the most, the investor needs protection, you don't. And as we go through it, you will see over a period of time, some of that changes. So that's one. Second is, one of the things to remember, both for founders and investors, I used to stumble over it. I see founders stumbling over it even now, and investors. You don't make money on terms. You make money on getting into business with the right, in the right company. I know as a VC, we have increasingly moved towards that viewpoint. Terms matter because they are rules of engagement, okay? And having rules of engagement is very important in any engagement. But money is not going to be made or lost basis that. And I think if a VC keeps that perspective and the founder realizes that the VC has that perspective, some of this is easier. And final point is, at Matrix also, with this, I remember when I started, I used to think of every edge case. There are two contra points here. One is, legal agreements are about possibilities, not probabilities. What happens is, when you're discussing those edge cases and possibilities, it makes people question intent. Specifically, the founder questions the VC's intent. We'll talk about event of default.
Yep.
It's not that we are expecting you to default, but it's a possibility.
Yeah.
If it is all going to be on trust, why have a legal document?
Yes.
Right? So that's one thing to keep in mind. And third, and the final point to that is, the reverse is, we believe that things should be moving to market terms. And increasingly, you know, we've been in discussions, you see me saying it to our law firms, what is market?
Yeah.
I don't want to get anything that is better than market. I don't want to give anything that is worse than market. Let's all play by the market rules. In the US, the National Venture Capital Association has actually taken out a lot of the clauses and made it very simple. We as VCs tried to actually do it 2-3 years ago.
Hmm.
We couldn't reach agreement. Kabhi na kabhi ho jayega, but until it gets there, you have to realize that everybody has their few sensitive points, but nobody is trying to make money by, you know, screwing the founder or vice versa.
Yeah, and I think as early stage investors, we only make money when the founder is successful. We don't make money when the founder is not, right? And given we are founders first and obviously talking about the founders, so let's start with the founders reverse vesting, right? Our shares, investor shares don't reverse vest. So why should founders shares reverse vest? That's one. And should it be reset to zero when the first round of investment is happening, or say the founder has run the company for 2 years, so it should start with 20, 30%. Yeah. So how should the founder think about it?
So in a lot of these, Dada, I'm going to give you non-technical answers. We are putting money. When does that money go in? At a moment in time or a period of time?
Moment in time.
Founder is putting in sweat. When does that go in? At a moment in time or a period of time?
Period in time.
Answer is right there. Why should we be vested and why should founder be vested? Because the sweat is not there yet. You haven't earned your equity, right? Yeah. I had reverse vesting when I started Bazi. Now, typically, what the founder, and some of this I think will come back to bite us if founders see this. What I think if I was a founder, I would say is, how many years have I been doing the business? If I've been doing the business a few years, you are investing in a certain stage of my business, then vest me 20, 30% upfront. I think that's a fair ask. I think you would see that if in any of our deals somebody asks that, we will say take it. Now, the contra argument is when a new investor is coming in, let's say we have invested, we said, chalo, you can, you know, pre-vest 20, 30%.
Yeah.
The poor new guy has not seen all of that work, no? So they sometimes will want the clock to get reset. So there is no black and white answer here. It's a gray area. I think fundamentally one side should vest is very clear. One side should not is very clear. How some of that plays out is a nuance of the business. What is the stage? How much time has gone in? That's one side of the argument. The other is always remember what founders don't realize, the repeat founders do. I have had a repeat founder tell me, I didn't put reverse vesting in the term sheet. I got a call saying, aapne reverse vesting kyun nahi dali? I said, because, you know, most of the time it gets negotiated. Mm. I respect you a lot. If I have to worry about you running away, then I shouldn't be investing in you. He said, nahi, nahi. Bahut important hota hai. Agar meri reverse vesting hai, toh mere sab co-founders ki reverse vesting hoegi. Co-founders ki reverse vesting hoegi. Koi chhod ke jayega, wo equity humare paas wapis aegi. So that's the part that founders don't realize, that this is actually, and I know, Dada, you have made this statement before, and you should add to this, think company first. It's not investor first or founder first, what's best for the company.
Yeah, fair. And a lot of the terms that we'll discuss today, right, if we keep the objective of what is right for the company versus what is right for a single founder, I think most situations will be amicable. Yeah. And a company generally is a constituent of multiple different founders as well, right? Now, moving from reverse vesting to control, and who should control the board? And typically when we invest, say, in seed or series A, it's a founder-dominated board. But as more and more investors start investing, typically the board switches from founder-dominated to investor-dominated. How should a founder think about it?
And you know, this is where you will say that when you are negotiating, I tell you to do something else, but what I am actually about to say is something else. I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
I think in India, companies are not run by boards. Boards are rubber stamp. I was just talking to a founder where I know we are supposed to advise that when a new investor comes in, another investor seat goes up, founders should not increase their board seats. I advised him exactly the opposite. I said, you want to keep board control? Keep board control. Indian companies are not, until IPO, until much later stages, they are not run by boards. They are run by SHAs. And I know we will come to investor thresholds and stuff like that. As a founder, what's in the SHA in terms of voting thresholds is far more important than who's controlling the board. Because the SHA overrides the board.
Yeah.
Until the board overrides the SHA, which only happens at IPO.
Yeah.
When you convert your stock and it becomes a board governed company, it's all irrelevant. So to me, it doesn't matter. I know now some founders will see this and they'll assume that it's a founder control board for the future. I'll tell you as a founder how I would think about it. In the early, ultimately, today the founders who are starting, they want to take their companies public. They are not looking to sell. As you go through the journey, as you start thinking about IPO, I would actually personally want to transition from a founder controlled board to an independent board, not to an investor controlled board. And the way to make it independent is equal seats between investors and founders, and independents appointed by concurrence of both, or each appoints one, which kind of makes them, you know, loyal to one side or the other.
Yeah.
So I think people should increasingly start thinking IPO backwards. So the transition from founder to investor control, I don't worry about. If it is very important to founders, I let it go. Personally, I don't think it matters, because I think the company is run by the SHA.
And
that's where the nuance lies.
And then we'll spend a lot of time on sort of investor majority in AVI. But before we do that, a couple of more things that we generally discuss with founders. One of that is ESOP pool, right? When, say, there are multiple co-founders, they're starting up, everyone has 20-25% equity. But as early stage sort of investors, we still generally advise them to have a significant ESOP pool. A, why have the ESOP pool? And B, what's a good benchmark at sort of inception?
Yeah. I mean, who was telling me, one of our companies, the funding round is not announced yet. Well, off business, we can talk about openly. So he prides himself. I don't know what the number is, but it's something in the tens, maybe 50 or 60 dollar millionaires on paper. Okay. The company I was just thinking about, the first thing he said after he got a term sheet at a good price, he said, aapko pata hai, 50 crorepati ban gaye. Right? That's why you have ESOP, right? Otherwise, wo kaise banenge crorepati, right? Mm. And ultimately, companies are built by teams and organizations. There is also, you know, we talk about internally about digital nation building, but also about the wealth creation. Narayan Murthy actually started this in India. I could argue even before that, Dhirubhai Ambani started the equity culture. Infosys was the first organization that went deep in ESOPs, made a bunch of dollar millionaires. So I think it's a no-brainer. Actually, the issue is a little bit that in India, it's not appreciated enough. Didn't used to be appreciated enough. Founders were trying to say 7%, 8%. US is standard, 20%. Early stage, 20%. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in my view, it depends how many co-founders you have. Because what we are trying to solve for is the key pillars of the organization owning enough. If you have 3 or 4 co-founders, maybe you can have an 8-10% pool.
Yeah.
If you have one founder and one co-founder, you have a 20%, because you are trying to think about size of the pie, not slice of the pie, right?
Yes.
The other piece, which actually we cover in other podcasts, but just to finish it here, is at some point, depending on the seniority stage of the company, you move from thinking about percentages to multiple of CTC for the person. In my personal view, somebody who's joining at X CTC, assuming they stay with the company 5-6 years and company does well, should make 5 to 10 times their CTC.
Yeah.
5 to 10 times CTC is very different than making 5 to 10 times your salary by staying somewhere 5 years. A, because that is likely to exceed, but B, it's capital gains.
Yes.
Right? And you have still made the salary in that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just accelerates. So I think that's the thought process.
And I agree. And probably the line that was most interesting was size of the pie.
Not slice
of the pie. And as founders also, when we talk to early stage founders, right? Early stage founders are also looking for employees who come with the founder mentality, who think of themselves as founders. And for that to happen, they need, obviously, the ESOPs and the equity.
You know, you said something. So, you know, we talk a lot about experienced founders in our portfolio, whether it's Anurag, whether of OneCard, Ashish has all the characteristics of Off Business, Revan, Jitain, like there are so many, Amit Lakotia. You know what's common in them? I don't necessarily agree with this. But they don't pay them their last salary. They don't pay the key people their last salary. They want people with 30-40% haircuts to salary, because that tells them they are really... And by the way, then they will give them co-founder titles.
Yes.
And then they will give them tons of equity. I think that's brilliant culture building.
Oh, fair.
Although I think this 30-40% lower is unnecessary, because people get used to a certain lifestyle typically, and you don't want to... But I like the concept.
Fair. They're essentially converting agents to principals, and I think that's the concept, right?
Yeah.
Moving on, what about founder top-ups and MSOPs?
It's a terrible idea.
It's rare in the US, but reasonably common in India.
It's terrible idea. It's bad behavior taught by all investors, including people like us, but more by later stage investors. It's used as a tool to divide and conquer. Later stage investor will say, take this valuation,
which may be lower than what the company can get. I will make you up in your dilution by issuing you MSOP. What about my dilution, other people's dilution? And I was debating this with a founder. And you know, it's hard for me to, because he said, sir, aapko milti to aap nahi lete. So I said, I don't know, I probably would have. Then so I said, but the difference is I may not ask for it. So his counter was, it's my job to ask. The other side can say no.
Yeah.
The problem is in current circumstance, the other side is not saying no. And I think at some point it's the founder's job to not ask. And they have to stop asking for these things. They misalign incentives. People remember generally. Now, there are situations where, see, the reality is if a founder has got diluted a lot, is it my fault? Is it the investor's fault? No. Now, there are situations where you can have a founder who's done a great job, but market circumstances, competition, something or the other, they have fought, but they just got diluted a lot. I have some empathy and sympathy for that. But usme kya karna hai? Performance linked.
And
it has to be value creation linked, not any business milestone, nothing. And generally exit linked.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in the recent IPOs, there's a lot of talk about the founders getting issued new ESOPs. A lot of them are at 2x, 3x, 5x the prices. Yesterday, I sent you guys an article on Elon Musk becoming the richest man in the world. Guess what? He's become the richest man in the world actually through MSOPs, because he took zero equity, zero comp. He had this big package he signed on 3-4 years ago, which sounded crazy at that time, that if Tesla became 700-800 billion or a trillion, and Tesla may have been 30-40 billion. So when that kind of wealth creation is happening, should something go back? Yes. But the problem is, there is no nuance to this. Ye default ho jata hai. Ki maine 100 million se 200 million valuation kar di, tab bhi clawback. 100 million se 2 billion ki, tab bhi clawback.
Fair.
That I don't agree with.
That, and I think also sometimes there are situations where probably there are multiple co-founders, and in the beginning one co-founder may not have had enough amount of equity.
That's a good one.
And essentially, probably that co-founder is driving the company.
Yeah.
Then the board comes across and things to sort of...
Yeah. And by the way, I'll tell you one thing. If you look at public companies in the US, more in the US, because in India, public companies have tended to be more promoter run.
Yeah.
So independent boards never existed. In the US, the CEOs, even if they are founders, typically do get topped up every year in stock grants. I mean, if you look at Sundar Pichai and...
I was about to say the same. Satya Nadella, Sundar Pichai.
I mean, they become billionaires on the back of stock issuance.
Yeah.
That's also MSOP.
Yeah.
And one of the founders told me, when he said it, I didn't like it. But then I thought about it and I agreed with it. He said what is happening is, if the owner, the founder, is also the manager, then it's assumed that they already have. But if a professional is coming to manage, the board happily gives. So I think there is something for the boards also. This is where, by the way, board matters, not in all the other stuff. This is where a good board, a comp committee, having... it is, by the way, in our companies, and I think you have seen this, I make sure that by Jan or Feb, we are discussing the compensation package of the founders before they bring it up. So I think part of it is also the responsibility of the board and the investors. Don't let them bring it up, right? But right now, it's 70-30 the other way.
So from founder MSOPs, where founders want to accrete and own more, let's talk about founder liquidity basket, where essentially they want to sell and encash, right? What's your thought on that, and how to think about it across stages?
Yeah, you know, it's scary, but I can paint one. I noted this down. I could paint one situation where a founder raises a ton of money, dilutes investors, but does secondaries along the way, because you're saying that should be allowed also, starts angel investing, makes more money in his other companies. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Where is the alignment of interest? You are asking for top-ups and you're liquidating at the same time. It should be one or the other, no?
Yes.
But again, it's today accepted. Now again, personally, if you ask me, I am in favor of secondaries. I believe, because I was chasing my first $1 million, I believe people chase their first $1 or $2 million, right? I think you should get that out of their system. So some of it is what percentage of ownership,
some of it is how meaningful to lifestyle. And to me, if it's $2, $3, $4, $5 million, somewhere in that range, and if it's in the 5 to 10% of their ownership, so obviously that means some value has been created. I think it should happen. I think people get a second wind. They get actually more fired up. They become hungrier. One of the founders, who I think is, along with his co-founder, going to be worth $1 billion. We were chatting the other day, and he's like, I'm more driven, I'm hungrier, I want to do this, I want to do that. That also happens. And you see that with the Elon Musk and the Bezos and all of that. So, again, cuts both ways.
Yeah.
So, what are the rules? Modest, one time, should not keep becoming ongoing thing. Ideally, should not be the one who's also asking for MSOPs. Should be a significant lifestyle change. And then your judgment call that this founder is just going to explode. I think it's a balance.
Got it. Fair and very interesting. The next one, Rahul, is one of the trickiest ones. This is around cause and an impact of cause on founders. So we have reverse vesting, the founder is on the board. But when cause gets triggered, essentially the founder loses his vested shares. More often than not,
explain
he has to
what
leave.
Cause means. Maybe just for everybody, you know, what are the different triggers in an employment agreement?
So,
well, first of all, founders sign an employment agreement with the company.
So essentially, either a founder can be asked to leave without cause or with cause. Cause typically is, generally it's a very high bar of cause, but cause is essentially fraud or misrepresentation, right? That's broadly where cause is. And if cause is triggered, because of which a founder needs to leave the company, they have to essentially let go of everything they had accreted till then.
Yeah. But you know what happens is, and including in our documents maybe 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, investors used to be too cute. And they used to make cause so vague that it could be interpreted to be performance.
Yeah.
It could be something random, like you made a mistake, you were driving a car, you got into an accident, there's an FIR against your name and your company is gone from you. So, I actually stepped into this one, both with our lawyers and with the founders. And I thought about, again, what would I want, what is fair if I was the founder, right? Mm. And to me, if I've committed fraud, I'm done, right? But allegation of committing fraud versus committing fraud is two different things. So, the way I think we are now able to structure, and like I said before, a lot of these experienced founders are very sensitive on these things. I think where we have reached convergence is separate the trigger from the consequence. Trigger, make it as tight as possible. And I advise the founders also. First of all, this framework I tell them openly and say, make the trigger. So whether it is, see, it depends again on the stage of the company. But it should be something that is provable or proven.
Yeah.
Not just FIR is filed, court case chala, kuch level of finality honi chahiye. So that is the trigger. If that final trigger is actually hit or triggered, consequences, you are done.
Now moving from founders to a little bit on investor rights, right? And as Avnish, you mentioned before, in India, it's not board dominated, it is SHA dominated, right? And the most important part of that is investor majority and then AVI rights linked with investor majority. So first, what is investor majority and what's the right percentage?
Why don't you explain how this works first? Like, what are we discussing right now?
So if you look at a typical SHA in India, right, you will have this concept of investor majority, which is all major investors, and there are thresholds, 3%, 4%, 5% owning more than that. So they constitute the investor majority. They constitute the major investors, and then a percentage of them constitute the investor majority. That could be 50%, 60%, and some of that which we'll discuss, right? Now, there are items which are reserved matters or AVI items. And if a founder needs to do any of them across the AVI items, they need approval from the investor majority. And that's how essentially all big decisions in early stage companies are taken. So that's the construct for it. Now, the question is, A, why investor majority, not why all investors, right? And B, what's the right threshold for that investor majority?
So 2-3 things. First, founders will say, why aren't we included in the investor majority? So there we go back to point number one.
Yeah.
It's asymmetric. It's your company. We are the minority. We need protection. Second, should only be major investors. Second criteria. So first, it won't be common stockholders. It will be major investors. So not everybody can do some gamification, bring some group together, which, by the way, you see, it's in the front pages of newspapers today about public companies. Some investor group doing this. You don't want any of that. So major investors. That's the second threshold.
And people vested in your interest, yes, because people have been there not for only financial reasons, but have probably put in enough amount of effort for the betterment of the company and understand the business.
Yeah. And so the concept is that large group that is very invested in it, both monetarily and in terms of time, they should be able to drive. Now, what is the alternative? The alternative is in Series A, when we invest, we have the veto.
Yeah.
In Series B, by the time we come to Series B, both have the veto. When you reach Series C, sometimes we say 2 out of 3. By the way, at that stage itself, my advice to founder is no 2 out of 3. Because 2 out of 3 ke baad 3 out of 4, uske baad 4 out of, it doesn't work. At that stage itself, I recommend now reach investor threshold. What does that mean? It is either simple majority or super majority. Simple majority is 51%, greater than 50% of the investor voting together as a class. Now, all of this can get fairly complex. As companies become larger and larger and have Series H, I, J, K, things, incentives might change. So some of the more stringent ones will have investor majority by series. Okay, that's almost like an individual veto, but it happens. And it's a terrible thing for the founders. But overall, all investors voting together as one class, simple majority or super majority. Super majority of 60%, 60, two-thirds is 66, or three-quarters 75, or 80. I think this is one of the most important clauses for the founders. They should not be worrying about board composition. They should be worrying about investor composition. When I design it as an investor in a company, I actually think about, and I'm giving the secret away, I actually think about who's likely to vote with me. And I give a number where I know I can hit that threshold. It's the founder's job to figure out who's likely to vote for me and how do I make sure that that doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
So we actually have, actually lawyers will do this. They will say 60%, these blocks can get it done.
Yeah.
Founders often don't realize that that's what's happening at the investor's side. So, and I think the founders should. This is much more important than anything else.
Fair. I think Avnish is making my job of negotiating term sheets extremely difficult. But moving from investor majority to AVI rights, right? And that's probably the core of essentially how all large decisions are taken. Sometimes founders don't want to run around for all small things, right? Like ESOP grants, hiring, finding a KMP. And essentially, it ends up becoming a bottleneck for them. So what should be part of AVI and what should not be part of AVI?
Yeah. Just going back to your comment on making life difficult, actually, the objective is the opposite, Dada. Like we started off saying, money is not made on terms.
Yes.
If in the future, we can reach a situation where we send this podcast to people and in 7 days, the deal is closed, we are done. Life becomes so much easier. Because that's the reality is we are giving both sides over here, right? Now,
fair.
So coming to this. Look, initially, not worth discussing. There will be 20 AVIs. You don't have the negotiating leverage as a founder. It is what it is. It sounds much worse than it is in reality. You were telling me, most of it is on email. Why do people even worry about it, right? So, initial stages, there's not much debate. And by the way, this is separate from the thresholds we discussed. The thresholds decide who gets to trigger. This is what gets triggered.
Yes.
Now, as companies scale, and this is where I was just advising another founder how to handle this, there are 3 types of AVIs. There is economic rights, there is governance, and there is operating covenants. In economic rights are generally around what affects my shareholding. No one can touch it. Founder should not try to move it into a threshold. I'll never allow another shareholder to vote on what should happen to my liquidation preference.
Yes.
So when it comes to these, it's typically almost individual veto, or it'll be that super majority threshold. When you talk about governance, should a company do M&A? Should it go public? I could argue that it affects my shareholding, but it also affects a lot of other people. It's not targeted at me personally or Matrix, right? Or one investor. I think that moves to some other threshold, which is lower than almost an individual veto. And then you get to operating. By the time you have reached this level of capital raise, if you ask me, I have We have, I think the company has only reached that because they're doing well. I don't like to have, you know, I like to keep operating covenants very, very loose. There should be an annual budget, very simple. On the annual budget, there should be a X deviation percentage from annual budget. I don't even like to say can't take loan more than this. If it's in the annual budget, you can do whatever you want.
Yes.
Because it's our job as investors to then check that annual budget and make sure we are comfortable. Other than that, so simple annual budget, deviations from annual budget. KMP, it's a controversial one. I don't care. I care about ESOP issuance beyond a certain level, above 1% or something. Who company? If I don't trust the founder in hiring somebody, why am I even doing that?
And I like the fact that you brought the point of trust. I think it is finally information asymmetry. In the beginning, both the parties are trying to trust. I think in companies which are mature, we never even discuss about this, right? Because there's a level of trust that's already built where you know the founder is doing right by the company.
No, so I was just in a board meeting before this where the last slide was ESOP issuance. And it was 2 lakhs, 3 lakhs. And I asked the founder, I'm like, why are you showing us this? She's like, because it's in the SHA. I'm like, damn, it shouldn't be in the SHA.
Good. Block on sale to competitors.
Yeah, this is my favorite one, Dada, and I put it in here. I think this gets negotiated the most. And do you want to explain the clause or should I just keep going?
Keep going. Okay.
So this is, I'm a founder. I don't want you to sell my company to the competitors, fair. I don't want you to sell your stake to the competitors. I'm not sure it's fair. So it needs more nuance. Now, typically, founders will say, you can't sell. I just don't think that's fair. Ultimately, if the company, if I have to remember one thing, and we were joking about this before, I think the simple contract between founder and investor should be, founder should say to the investor, do not mess with my company. And investor should tell the founder, do not mess with my exit.
Yes.
This is messing with my exit. I should have all possible exit options. Now, what is fair? I think giving founders some time before you are allowed to do this is fair. 2 years, 3 years, founders will say till exit period. Was then though, you know, we are all the way 5-6 years. What you know, maybe you're not creating any value along the way.
And block on sale to competitors anyways still exit. After exit, anyways it falls away. So it doesn't matter.
So then there is a question that, do you have a block? Or I'll give you a right of first give me a right of first refusal. It's not fair. Because if you give a right of first refusal, you can't exit because people know that price can be matched. So it's a right of first offer. So what is fair? This clause should be in favor of the investor, not in favor of the founder. Okay? Because investor needs their exit. I think there should be, depending on context of the company, a 18-month to 3-year period where you're blocked. After that, you are allowed with a ROFO. And in that first 18 to 24 months also, whatever that number was, you are blocked to a very small named list. You can't just block me from anybody.
Yeah.
You tell me, who do you think is competition today? 2-3 people, okay, fine, I can't sell. After that, I'll give you a ROFO. After exit, free.
Fair. And I think similar to that is exit and the investor's right to drag. I think the answer is very similar.
Don't touch. No, so the issue is, founders say you can't drag other investors or can't drag me. How will I sell the company?
Yeah.
An incoming buyer wants to buy 100% of the company. So I just don't think negotiate the exit period. Don't negotiate what happens after the exit period.
Which is fair and very interesting. The founder should have multiple shots at the goal, but after that, obviously, the investors should get their right to exit, right? Let's quickly maybe cover investor tag.
I don't even know why it's here, but sometimes other investors, founders will say, if you're selling, I can tag. Other investors, this is just, these are actually clauses that are non-starters.
Yeah.
Okay. These are in the non-starter market, don't touch. These are things that affect an investor's exit. Nobody can tag when the investor is exiting because it increases the amount the buyer has to pay. There'll be no ROFO, anything on the shares. Because, again, there's a symmetric ask. Because we have ROFO on the founder shares, they should have ROFO. No, we have invested in your company. So these are like non-starters where sometimes I think people just waste too much time. Event of default, It's a possibility. It should. It needs to be there to make the document complete. I've never seen it triggered.
Mm.
So I just think it's one of those that founders should say it looks ugly. It make sure that trigger is very, very narrow. But I can tell you that in my 15 years, it's never been triggered when the going was shitty. So now that the going is good, I'm hoping it'll never happen.
Fair, fair. Maybe let's cover legal fees. I think financial DD and legal DD fees also ends up getting negotiated.
This
right?
is a shout out to Archana and Rajaram Legal because they wanted it to be included. And you know, the point they made actually resonated with me. I would also, as a founder, really, I hate paying lawyers. I mean, much as we love Rajaram Legal. The point she made was, if you are going to pay me very little, please recognize that we have billing rates. I'm going to staff the cheapest resource that I have. That cheapest resource is not empowered to make decisions. Therefore, things will drag on longer. Therefore, the time is dragging on. And ultimately, I'll have to jump in with a bigger mess.
Yeah.
And that kind of resonates. And so maybe we are all being penny-wise, pound-foolish. There's a range. You know, sometimes I see foreign investors, the big funds, 100,000, 150,000, and founders pay because they're putting in that much money. But in the 10, 15, 20, 30 lakhs range, which is our play field, I think these are...
Fair. And it's speed versus cost.
And quality.
Yeah, yeah.
So
final question, I think... This is probably, hopefully 2021 is the beginning of IPOs for India.
Yeah.
And most of the founders starting up today or running their companies must be thinking about IPOs, right? So how should one think about terms upfront, keeping a IPO?
I wouldn't worry too much about it. See, all the SHA dissolves. We have to convert. This is something the founders shockingly don't know. The first step of becoming a public company is you dissolve the SHA. We convert our stock into common. All the stuff that we just talked about goes away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So focus on getting a company to be public, to go public rather than all of this. I'll tell you the only clause which has become something that founders and investors wrap themselves around, which I think is a waste of time. SEBI allows a company to go public based on either a professionally managed company or designated promoter. Who's designated as the promoter? Investors try to get cute, and that requires 20% ownership. Investors try to get cute and say, we will not get locked in as that promoter. And the founder says, what if I am below? And this negotiation goes on forever. Arey boss, public jao, uske wahan pe decide karenge. We have, everybody has a lot of companies going public. We have two companies that are going public. This clause didn't get discussed. It just fell into place. Thoda sa hota hai because 20% is required for lock-in. So now as an investor, are you locking? But remember, interestingly, in one of those companies, the largest shareholder wants to sell the most.
Hmm.
And shareholders like us want to sell the least.
Hmm.
If we had tried to negotiate it earlier, we would have refused lock-in and they would have agreed to lock-in.
Yeah.
It's turning out exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just think focus on taking the company public.
True, true. With this, we'll end sort of this episode, but... thank you, Avnish, for taking the time out. And for our viewers, would love to hear back from founders. If you agree with us, do let us know. If you disagree with some things we said, would love to hear
from
you as well.
Do let Dada know.
But with that, thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.